Parks and Recreation Season 7, Episodes 3 and 4 are over, but we are just getting started here at Post Show Recaps. Hey everyone, my name is Mike Bloom. I'm one of the co-hosts here at Post Show Recaps, and on the Rob Has a Planet sphere, and we are going to be talking about Parks and Recreation once again. Now, I know I spoke last week with Josh Wigler about the season premiere, and I know we said we weren't going to speak again until the series finale, but we figured this was a special week, very special episode, and I have a very special person joining me. You know him from Post Show Recaps and Rob Has a Planet as well. He is currently recapping this current season of Justified with the one and only Josh Wigler, and we'll be recapping the series premiere of Better Call Saul soon. It is the one and only Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how you doing?
Mike, how are you? I'm happy to be here. I love Parks and Recreation. It's probably, I would say it's my favorite sitcom of all time. It's right up near the top for favorite television show of all time. So it's a true joy for me to be sitting here and talking about it with you tonight. And hopefully with everybody who's a fan of the show. I listened to your podcast with Josh recapping the premieres, like you said. And I was so excited that we could talk about Parks and Recreation. And I'm glad you're a liar. I'm glad you said we weren't going to cover it again. And here we are. I'm happy for once, Mike Bloom, that you, sir, are a dishonest gentleman.
You would not be the first person to say that, surprisingly.
All right.
Get in line.
All right. Get in line for the dishonest Mike Bloom train.
So what Antonio was alluding to, as I talked about before, at the end of the last podcast I did with Josh, we said, well, we're probably not going to be doing any more Parks and Recreation podcasts until the series finale. But after viewing this week's episodes, specifically the latter one titled Ron and Leslie, or Leslie and Ron, either or, which was a very different episode for Parks and Recreation, it honestly is, in my opinion, one of the best episodes the show has ever done. And I felt like there was just so much to talk about, and I didn't want to wait a whole month to dissect it. So I was able to get Antonio on the horn to come on and spout about it. But before we really dive in, Antonio, you were just talking before about how big of a fan you are. I mean, you said it was one of your top TV shows of all time. I would love to know, since Josh and I talked about this last week, our own personal stories, how did you get involved with the show? How did you find out about it? And maybe we can start a discussion from there of what do you absolutely love about Parks and Recreation as a series?
So it's weird. I was a fan of The American Office, and I wasn't really hip to the behind the scenes, who the showrunners were, who was in charge, who was in the writer's room. This was probably right at the cusp of when that sort of thing really was going to jump on my radar. And I was a fan of the Gawker blog called Deadspin, which is sort of a sports gossip blog. You guys are all probably familiar with it. And on Deadspin, they started featuring articles from a blog called Fire Joe Morgan, which was just a really low-read internet blog just devoted to ripping bad sports writing and bad sports announcing. Joe Morgan is a former Cincinnati Reds announcer, and he has very close-minded and archaic views on baseball. And these guys, whoever was writing Fire Joe Morgan, they were breaking down Joe Morgan and other people like him, these archaic baseball heads, with actual statistics and just incredibly hilarious sarcasm. So it became revealed on Deadspin that the guys that were writing this blog that I came to love were in the writer's room at the office. And one of them, the chief among them, was Mike Schur. And Mike Schur is the co-creator and showrunner of Parks and Recreation. When The Office was getting an alleged spinoff somewhere around season 4 or 5 of The Office, it was kind of his show that he was going to get co-creating with Greg Daniels. And from there, I was hooked. I was like, I got to see this show. This is the guy who does Fire Joe Morgan. He's getting a spinoff. I love The Office. Like, it's got Amy Poehler. I'm a big fan of Amy Poehler. There's no way this thing isn't going to play out. And then I watched season one, and I had mixed feelings. I remembered that season one of The American Office was not exactly a hit, and it wasn't something that I thought was terribly hilarious. So I gave them a little bit of a break, and by the end of season one's short little run of episodes, I thought they were starting to find their voice. And then they start with season two, with the episode with the gay marriage of the Penguins, and I was all in. I probably watched that episode 15, 20 times since then, and I've been a fan really deeply ever since. So I'm really happy I got on the board. I got on board the train when I did, and I followed. Kind of, I was just so hooked. And I tell you, it's been nonstop nervousness being a fan of this show, because every year the show is seemingly low rated and NBC has tried so hard to keep Thursday night comedy relevant, and the ratings just kept going down and down and down, and it just seems so dire. And somehow inexplicably, here we are in 2015 on season 7 of Parks and Recreation. I really couldn't be happier, and I'm happier still to be talking about it right now.
Just to be clear, when you said Office spinoff, you didn't mean The Farm, right? You meant Parks and Recreation.
I did not mean The Farm, although I think The Farm had some potential, mainly because Mike Shore also, perhaps famously, played Moe's Schrute on The Office. Dwight's crazy, seemingly mute, insane cousin, does all his own stunt work, Mike Shore. So whether he's running up the top of a car or hiding in a cornfield, that's Mike Shore with that crazy Amish beard. And so I did not mean The Farm, though. No. This was a show that it's similar to how Brooklyn Nine-Nine is not a true spinoff of Parks and Rec, but Mike Shore is the co-creator along with Dan Gore, who was in the writer's room of Parks and Rec for a really long time. So they're kindred spirits. They're cousins, at least, but there are no shared characters like there would be on The Farm. Lord knows. I don't know. I wonder if in the 2017 of Parks and Rec, do you think The Farm is on like its fourth or fifth season as a smash hit?
Is it going to like, or maybe it's one of those other relics that's in the William Henry Harrison Museum of like,
what could have been?
Yeah, what could have been? Considering The Wire swept Emmys, I could have imagined that The Farm probably would have taken off in that alternate reality as well.
Yeah, for those of you unfamiliar, The Farm was a proposed spinoff of The Office. I believe, Mike, did they shoot a pilot?
They shot a pilot, and the pilot was kind of cobbled together into, I believe, a season 8 episode actually called The Farm. And it was kind of like an introduction as to what the show would be like. And then since it wasn't so well received, I think Paul Lieberstein, who played Toby and was one of the executive producers on The Office and showrunners for a couple seasons, had created it. But it didn't go over well with the higher ups. And so they kind of axed it.
I can't imagine why a sitcom focusing on Dwight Schrute's weird, somehow seemingly German Dutch beet farm would not have been a big hit. But I don't know. Maybe I just don't know TV.
I know you don't know America, Antonio.
I don't, because I assume in the 2017 of Parks and Rec that and Mulaney are vying for the top show on television slot.
Oh, man, is that the darkest timeline?
Well, I am rubbing my beard right now. You figured that one out.
And I'm tending to my one arm.
Oh, well, perfect.
So, Antonio, I know you're a big Simpsons fan as well. And I know I brought up last time that one of the things I absolutely love about this show is how the town has kind of become its own character, and in terms of all these random, not even supporting characters, but more so cameo characters just coming out of the woodwork and being fleshed out. You want to talk a little bit more on that? And I would love to know, what are some of your, you know, Josh and I brought up characters like John Ralphio and Mona Lisa, and we missed Pert Hapley. But what are some of those types of characters that you'd love to see come up once in a while?
The thing about the question that you just asked is I'd like to answer it right now. So, yeah, I love that. I love that it's sort of a live action Springfield. I'm a big fan of the TV show Father Ted, which is an Irish kind of Channel 4 TV show. I think you can watch it on Netflix. It's created by Graham Linehan, who created the IT Crowd. And their goal with that show, which is about three priests kind of stranded on this crazy island. They've been sent out because they're not good priests. They've been sent out to this horrible parish in the cold, dark middle of nowhere in Ireland. And their goal with that show was to create a live action Springfield, live action Simpsons, like a series where you could watch things and it was like The Simpsons. It was that kind of tone and style. And Mike Schur, obviously a huge fan of sitcoms and of TV. There's no doubt that Pawnee, because it's sort of this nebulous Indiana town, it's not a real town. Maybe it's loosely based on Fort Wayne or Fort Fun, as we like to call it in the Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio tri-state area. Maybe it's not, but it's a fake town. So as a fake town, it can be however big or small it needs to be. It can't, like Springfield, have a harbor and at the same time be, you know, driving distance of capital city and all these things. But it is definitely this sort of be however you want it to be. There was a good nod to that in the beginning episode, in the episode 2017 of this season, when April and Andy are driving around and they're just like, I've never been to this this part of Pawnee before. This is the warehouse, just whatever it is. Like, they're just kind of like, oh, they're acknowledging we've never seen this part of town on the show before. And I do love that one of the ways that manifests most clearly is in the recurring kind of minor characters within the universe of Pawnee. Of course, these pop up most commonly in the town hall meetings, mm-hmm. whether it's your guy who says ham and mayonnaise, or whether it's Harris, you know, Joe Mandy shows up in the crowd a couple times, one of the writers for Parks and Rec and a stand-up comic. You've got Harris Whittles, another one of the writers who pops up now and then as one of the animal control guys. I love Sewage Joe.
Yeah.
The guy. That's one of my all-time favorites.
So creepy.
So creepy and just unabashedly creepy. And I love how it's first introduced. They're jealous of Sewage. Tom's like, why does Sewage always get all the women and all the hot interns and all that? So I love that. Mike Schur is obsessed with naming characters. He really likes to make sure all of his characters have almost full names. You'll see that if you're kind of aware of that, you'll see popping up, whether it's just a random guy like the guy on the episode, the William Henry Harrison episode last night, the William Henry Harrison expert, he gives his full name. Like, Mike Schur is obsessed with this. So I think by doing that, you sort of set a stage for each little minor character having an interesting little story. And because they've had seven seasons and they go back to the well, the town halls now and again, you do see that. I'm a little upset that they burned Sewage Joe with the episode where he texted out pictures of his genitals on purpose. But I miss Sewage Joe. I hope he does pop up in this final season. I don't think it'll be enough. I've always been a fan of Pert Hapley. I love when Ron Swanson wakes up at the telethon and sees Pert Hapley doing the worm. And he's just like, what the are you doing, Pert Hapley? I'd love it. I mean, so I'm a big fan of really all of these characters. I'm a little soft on Joan Calamezzo myself. I think it's a good performance. I think that it's a funny character, but I think that this season actually was good use of her because it drug her out to the extreme that I think she was headed. So she just went downhill so quickly, and it's very interesting. So I like a lot of these characters. I don't know. Are there any in hindsight that you wish you'd mentioned? You said Pert Hapley. Are there any others that you're like, wow, I can't believe I didn't say X?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think the animal control guy was a good one. There are some. I'm also thinking about, like, not necessarily ones I love, but just like really weird guest stars. Like I'm thinking about like the Andy Samberg.
Yeah, when he's yelling everything, right? I was just thinking about that,
and I was like, I don't know if that was funny or not. I'm trying, like, because like it was still season two. They were trying to work out the kinks, and I'm like, this does not fit in with the game of this town at all. Like, people are like weird, yes, but they're not weird to the point of like they're yelling things. I'm trying to go through the history of the show and think about like all these celebrities.
Yeah, if you want a really awkward guest star, also from season two, do you know what direction I'm headed in with this one?
Oh God, I'm trying.
Considering what we know now, considering what we know now about, I don't know. I'm just going to say Will Arnett. Will Arnett's appearance.
Oh, yeah. As the X-ray technician.
Yes. Considering at that time he was in a relationship with Amy Poehler. They are no longer in a relationship. I believe Amy Poehler is now in a relationship with Nick Kroll, who plays the douche.
The douche. I love him.
Yeah.
I would say Crazy Iron the douche are up there with some of my favorite.
Yep. Yeah. What's the name of that guy who plays Crazy Ira? Because he's an improv legend, right?
Yeah, he's Matt Besser. He's one of the four founders of UCB with Amy Poehler.
Right. So I recognized his voice from like Comedy Bang Bang and other podcasts. When I heard him, I was like, I know that voice from somewhere. And you just realize that even the minor characters on this show, I mean, think about Derry Merbles, the Pawnee kind of version of NPR announcer
John Hodgman.
That's August Clementine. That's his rival.
Dan Castellaneta.
He's played by Dan Castellaneta. Right. So it's like just even the very small. The very, very small roles on this show sometimes are great, great guest stars who are somewhat like legendary from other TV shows or other mediums.
Yeah, it's just staggering. And I will say there are some occasional misfires, but otherwise they really utilize their guest stars very well. I'm looking at another big one that I don't think he was recurring, but I love the Detlef Schrempf.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And the other one is my favorite episode. Personally, I talked about this last week, was the Comeback Kid, which is a season four episode, one of the mid campaign episodes. And I loved that character of Pistol Pete, the guy who like dunked who got like the last minute dunk to win the game. And he's like traumatized by the experience, and they bring him out on the ice again, and he like shatters his leg while doing it.
Yeah, that's great. I love that little weird kind of B story in that episode between he and Anne, where she's sort of serving as his like psychoanalyst, or she's like, he's had a really tough life, and he's talking about his father and weeping and all that. It's really funny.
Yeah, let's segue into some more of our main ensemble. I'm just I want to get Antonio's opinion on everything, since I know you're such a huge fan. Now, I know Josh and I have both professed our love for Ben last week. I talked a little bit about Tom as well. We talked about Leslie too. Are there any big ensemble characters that you absolutely love and would care to spout their name to the ends of the earth?
Yeah, Ron Swanson. I mean, I think he's like the polar opposite of me politically, but I think he's without question in my mind the sort of weird in the way that Dwight from The Office is, or in the way other characters from TV series are. I like Tracy Morgan from 30 Rock, or he's just kind of the breakout character in a lot of respects. He's the character that I think takes it from like a niche comedy, which I love Ben Wyatt, but I think Ben Wyatt in a lot of respects is fan service to people like you and I who love Ben Wyatt, who are in a lot of ways like Ben Wyatt. And Ron Swanson couldn't be more different than I am, but he's broad enough and his niche is identifiable enough from a comedic standpoint that I think that he is kind of the character the audience finds most appealing. It doesn't hurt that you can meme cats that look like Ron Swanson And the idea that Nick Offerman and Ron Swanson, the character, are very similar is something I think is beautiful about the way this show has been written. They know their actors well enough to know that the material they can really chew into. Obviously, every time Ron Swanson talks about caning a chair or any of the weird woodworking devices that he has particular fetish for or against, that's obviously coming from the mouth of Nick Offerman. That's something that's coming right from him. So I love that so much of him is in that character. And I think a lot of it, Aziz, is in Tom Haverford. But, you know, there's things about Aziz that I don't like. So there are times when I don't like Tom. And I think last night's episode with Leslie and Ron really underscores some of the things you're not supposed to like about Leslie and about Ron, and about the way that Leslie can just be a bulldozer and get caught up and miss out on things like standing up Ron for lunch or not realizing the emotional cues that he was putting off. And you get Ron, who's a little bit closed off and doesn't really share or emote in a way to let people know that they're hurting him or walking all over him. But I mean, Tom's negative characteristics are sometimes unbearable. He's just so annoying. There are episodes where he runs rampant over our boy Ben Wyatt, where he tells him, like, I need you to do these reports, Ben, and he just runs him down. And sure, by the end of the episode, Tom's giving him an iPad that he personally bought for him. But all throughout that episode, he's insufferable. So Tom is a character that I like, you know, a little bit less than other characters on the show. And to be honest, there are times when Leslie gets a little overbearing. And I think those episodes where Leslie is at her most unappealing are when the show struggles the most, because I think the show's at its best when it's really displaying the heart and showing Leslie Knope as like this amazing character who can do anything or seemingly just break down walls. And of course, they can't ever be like that all the time. And there are negative aspects to that character. So I think the episodes are important, but I think they're also less bearable and not as pleasing as some of the truly great episodes of the series.
I will say one character that I think we really did not talk enough about last week that I would love to just expound on him with you is Chris Pratt as Andy Dwyer, because I mean, you talk about how a lot of, you know, how Nick Offerman, you know, Ron Swanson's kind of written around him. I feel like Chris Pratt almost went in the opposite way with Andy Dwyer in terms of like he took one characteristic of Andy or a couple of different characteristics and just went to town on it. And as a result, I'm just very, I don't want to say proud, but I'm just very, I'm excited by what Chris Pratt and the writers were able to do, because we live in a world, specifically in our long running comedies, where we live in a world of the TV trope called Flanderization, where as a show becomes more tenured, the writing tends to get a little more broad. And as a result, characters will kind of become more defined by one or two qualities. One big example of that is Kevin from The Office, who started off as kind of like a slower person, but not, you know, relatively normal by, you know, reasonable standards. And then he soon becomes this, you know, borderline mentally challenged person who stands there mouth
functional,
the
right?
Exactly. Right. So Andy had the potential to really go down that territory, especially when they changed him from season one to season two. But Chris Pratt has been able to walk that fine line, in my opinion, of like, yes, he is kind of, you know, uncharacteristically, like unbelievably stupid, but he has such a giddy energy about it and such a glee. And he is a little bit of a savant in the way that he's able to like pontificate these phrases or these points of wisdom so well, but just out of nowhere, that it really brings a lot of fun to the character.
Yeah, it's true. And Mike Schur has gone on record saying this, I think, in numerous sources, that he believes that stupid is kind of the nuclear weapon of comedy, like in terms of pure belly laughs. You're not going to beat having just stupid stuff. So one of his favorite shows is Cheers, and he loves the Coach Woody role where you've got the just kind of dumb bartender or the kind of in Woody's case, he's, you know, I think he's from Indiana, or he's just kind of, this is not really his speed, keeping up with people like Frasier Crane. So he's lost on a lot of these things, and that plays out wonderfully on Cheers. And Parks and Rec, a lot of Andy Stupid seems to come from the fact that he's so eager and he's so earnest and he's just trying so hard to do the things that he does. If Leslie says, hey, run to the other office and get a calculator, and he comes back with a Rolodex, that's because he didn't even bother to listen to calculator and didn't think about it, and he was just so eager to please. So you're right, I think he has trended that very fine line, because I think there is a danger of not flanderizing. Flanderizing is probably the right word. Like, there is a danger of Kevinizing him, of taking him down a road where he is one dimensional. And I think that his relationship with April pulls him back from that to a certain extent, because you do see the heart of that character, and you do see the hopes and dreams of that character, and you don't always see them play out the way they do. He talks about his number one job he wants to do or whatever. He wants to catch the Super Bowl winning touchdown, and he's dead serious about it. He wants to be the biggest rock star in the world in 3 or 4 years, and he's dead serious about it. But all of that's because he's just so damn earnest and so desirous of doing a very good thing. When he goes and studies feminism or women's studies in college, there's another good example of that. He tries so hard to memorize all these facts he's supposed to know, when in reality he just needs to be him and do it at his pace and slow down and try to stop being so pleasing to everybody. And I think that really helps with Andy Dwyer. And Chris Pratt obviously brings a ton of that sentimentality to the character. I know that he's got some very famous ad libs that have been on the show. Mm-hmm. Probably one of his most famous ones is the Leslie's got the, I think it's from flu season, Leslie's yeah. sick, and he's typing in like, oh, I typed in your symptoms to this computer thing and it says you have network connectivity problems. It's like, that was an ad lib by him, totally in keeping with the character. Not something Chris Pratt would really ever say. He's not that dumb, but it's perfect for Andy Dwyer. He's just trying to do something. He's just trying to help, and he's a little bit over his skis.
Yeah, so let's. I'd like to segue that talk into a little bit of April and, by extension, Andy's storyline this season, because it seems like, you know, I had theorized last week that, you know, every member of the ensemble during this last season is going to get a major storyline. Right now, we're about a third of the way through, and that doesn't really look to be the case. I mean, granted, one of our episodes was, for all intents and purposes, a bottle episode, so we didn't really get any perspective or storylines from other characters. But one of the more secondary storylines this season has been the fact that April has been very unsatisfactory in her job, but she's going through, you know, the quarter life crisis type of moment of, what am I doing with my life? I want to be doing something I enjoy. And Andy's been helping her out with that. I would love to know from you, like, what do you think about the April storyline? B, do you have any idea where it's going? And C, do you think we're going to have an Andy storyline this season, or do you think it's just going to be a function off of April's storyline?
That's a very good question. I think we're probably going to get a little more on Andy and his TV show, I would assume, because that's such a good thing to introduce as kind of a thing that's happening and show that he's sort of more responsible without discussing how that all plays out. We did see the episode early on with April and Andy where they're sort of lamenting the fact that they're grownups and boring. And Andy's obviously much more mature. He's talking about taking his Zantac and he's talking about doing all these adult things. So he's grown up a lot and talking about his bank account. And it's a different kind of Andy that we're seeing. So I think there's a lot to be mined for with his TV show. And I don't think we've seen the end of that. So I do think we're going to see something with Andy. As for April's storyline, I think it's very interesting. It's a very nice shadow storyline for the storylines that we've seen in the past between April and Andy, when Andy's trying to figure out what he wants to do. And Andy is obviously older than April, so that sort of fits in a lot of respects, that maybe he's going to reach that point in his life where he doesn't want to be a shoe shinist anymore, and he wants to do something different, but he obviously is not going to be a rock star. And so he's sort of found his way. And now, having found his way, I think he's saying, hey, I'm up ahead of you here. Like, I'm waiting for you. I started a fire. Like, let me help you. Let me help you get there. And I think that's very sweet. It's also very funny. I didn't particularly think the stuff with the mortician was that funny, except for Ben's reaction to it. I had the same reaction, so I couldn't find a ton of humor in it because I was so creeped out by all the things that he was saying about drains and just it bothers me. So, but I do think that that's valuable, and I think the kind of secondary part of that is Ron was always sort of the surrogate father figure to her, and Leslie her surrogate, like her work mother and her work father. And if they were at odds with each other for these last 3 years, she probably didn't get a lot of valuable kind of combined or stereo feedback from them that she could distill into something positive. And she's always been sort of a women fancy kind of person. So it will be interesting to see where it plays out. I don't know if she replaces. I don't think that we can put her in a position where she replaces Leslie. And I don't think that would be in keeping with her being unhappy at the Parks Department, but where this takes her, I really can't say. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out personally whether this is something that's been foreshadowed earlier or whether this is just going to come completely out of left field. You know, like I don't know whether it's just going to be in the last episode. There's a scene of her. I don't know. She goes to Disney World and she finds out she wants to be the person in the Goofy suit, and that just sort of comes out of nowhere. Or whether she does like end up finding, you know, she's like, oh, I actually want to be this position all along and I didn't even realize it. Touching upon your part before about, you know, the Parks Department and the fact, and this will kind of tie into a little bit of the Leslie and Ron stuff from the second episode. I mean, the Parks Department, the Pawnee Parks Department, we basically don't know anyone in there at this moment. The Parks and Rec, the titular Parks and Rec is basically full of unknowns at this point, except for Craig, who we have yet to see, which makes me sad because I do love Billy Eichner in the role. But it's an interesting, and I don't want to, you know, derail too much from the question, but it's such an interesting concept that like this Parks and Recreation place that everything was centered around for six seasons is now gone, and everyone's kind of gone their separate ways. I don't know if it's going to be a we're getting the band back together type of thing where everyone, you know, joins up and decides to start working at the Parks Department again. But it's interesting, you know. It's like if the last season of Cheers was just, you know, everyone hanging out outside of Cheers while Cheers was closed down for fumigation or something.
I think that's really a great observation, because I felt that way. I felt something was off with the first two episodes. I laughed at them. I thought they were very funny, and there were things about them, especially the gimmick of the flash forward to 2017 that I really enjoyed. However, something didn't feel right, and I realized that it wasn't taking place in the Parks Department. And in that respect, it was wholly different than any other season of Parks and Rec. And that did not feel right to me. And so I was so happy last night that we got up. Not only did we get a bottle episode, but we got a bottle episode in this show's version of like a designer meth lab, like the very set that this show needed to be associated with. It was perfect, because it's not quite a character, but it absolutely is a beloved set in the mold of Cheers. In plenty of times in Cheers, you had scenes away from the bar, you had scenes in people's houses, you had scenes, famous scenes at things like the Boston Garden and stuff like that. But the heart and soul of Cheers is Cheers. It's the bar. And so the heart and soul of Parks and Recreation is the Parks and Recreation Department. And to not have that being part of the first couple episodes, it didn't feel like Parks and Rec to me. So I was happy to be back there. We did get to see like one little line of Craig in this last episode. And I'm happy to find out that he has moved into that role. So that's all very well and good. Even if he just shows up in a button at the end of an episode, I hope we see more Craig. I know he's a very polarizing character. But I'd like to think that if he's managed to rise to the level of Parks director and kind of inherit that position, that he can't be as insane as he was before. And I'm assuming that he's still doing sommelier work at Tommy's Place. So I don't know. It'll be very Tommy's Bistro. So it'll be very interesting to see where Craig goes. I've always thought that the last shot of the last episode of this series is either going to be at the lot where the park was built, or it's going to be at the Parks Department, like Leslie turning off the lights, similar to Sam Malone on Cheers, and walking out. I think that would be a great tribute to that show as well as this one. So if I'm going with that theory and believing that, then I think that there's got to be something that gets them back to the Parks Department. But they all, to a certain extent, have moved on with their lives. So I don't know, it'd be really hard to get Tom and Donna and some of these people back to the Parks Department. I'm thinking you could get Jerry Terry in there, no problem.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Terry, I'm surprised he didn't stay with the Parks Department.
Yeah. Just well, he retired and then he unretired. I don't understand why he'll do kind of whatever. He's just I can't remember how he was described in the episode last night by
something like a drone, I think. Yeah, it was the name they used.
And then they both agreed that he was perfect for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that we could see him come back. But I think I'd have a hard time seeing how we could do a get the band back together storyline. It will be very interesting to see where we go from here, because so much, if Ron and Leslie are kind of two minds or of one mind now, or are back together as a group in any respect, I don't know where that leaves the kind of first four episodes. What's going to happen with this land storyline? Are they going to still be at odds? Are they going to come around to each other's way of thinking? What's going to happen with Grizzle? So it'll be something that I'm looking out for as we progress through these episodes. Like, what is there going to be a storyline that involves Leslie having some major arc? I kind of thought Leslie and Ron would come this episode we saw last night, 8, 10, 12 episodes into the season. Mm-hmm. So I'm very surprised we got to it after episode 4, and it was a very short arc of them being at odds. I thought that was going to be the major story for the season. So I don't know what the major story of the season is going to be now, if there's going to be some outside influence or what that's going to bring them back to the Parks Department. Do you have any thoughts on the story arc as a whole for the season?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, I will say that I'm not vehemently opposed to the fact that the arc ended up ending after 4 episodes, because, I mean, I think some people, specifically pretty hardcore fans, found it a little uncomfortable to see them so at odds for more than one episode, just because, like, you know, they're friends, and we've seen so many episodes where Leslie goes to Ron for advice and vice versa. And I mean, if they had spaced it out to be once a week like it usually is, then that would have been a month. And I feel like that is plenty of time to have those two going at odds. But I agree with you to the extent of, like, yeah, I mean, they made up. Now what? You know, are all the actions of the and all the, you know, complication points of the first 4 episodes essentially undone, or are they going to try to take it and move on? Ron still has that deal with Grizzle, so I think he's still going to stick with it. I don't think he's just going to go up to Blake Anderson and say, you know, I'm not going to do this. Sorry, you know, I'm done. But I think they're still on opposite sides, unless Ron could convince Grizzle to build somewhere else. So it seems like there might be a new antagonist that needs to step up, and maybe that's coming in the form of a future guest star. I know we brought up last week that Bobby Newport will be returning, Catherine Hahn's character, Jen, the big Washington DC woman, is returning once more. Maybe those are going to be antagonists. I'm not sure, but I think they do need somebody, considering that, you know, we saw Jam before and Jam was completely neutered. He's no longer a villain. But I think we need someone in opposition to Leslie, especially if Ron's on her side now.
Yeah, and maybe they'll do a May the Best Man Win, and that storyline will become secondary. Or maybe Ron will back out of the deal with Grizzle, and Grizzle will still want to build there, and then it'll be somebody else that will be kind of a demon there. I don't know. There are some guest stars that could play that role who have been sort of in opposition to Leslie. You mentioned Catherine Hahn. She didn't hate Leslie. She came to admire her and absolutely really came into good graces with Ben. So I don't think that that we'll expect to see her come in sort of wearing the black hat. But I don't know. I think there's an opportunity for that. I also think there's an opportunity for these 13 episodes to just be fan service, to, as you pointed out earlier, give each character kind of a final moment or some kind of final thing. And if for April, that's going to play out over several episodes when it's like, what am I going to do with my life? And for Donna's getting married, apparently, to
Keegan-Michael Key.
To, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So to Keegan-Michael Key. So I think that's going to play out. And I think we'll see some aspects of that. I think we got our send off for Tammy too. So we've kind of dealt with that and Ron and Jammy. So I don't know if we're going to see some of these other characters get their kind of blow. If that's what it's going to be more, it's going to be, this season's going to be fan service and kind of wrapping up each one of our ensemble characters and giving them stuff to deal with and kind of showing what 2017 has brought them and where they're at the end of the story. I think that I'm okay with it if the season plays out that way and there isn't an overarching story. For so often, Mike Schur in the writer's room and the team at Parks and Rec have been forced to write their season finales as though they could also double as series finales. Mm-hmm. So you have such a great episode like Lil Sebastian, which could easily have been a series finale. And you have several of those, really, three or four of them at least. And as a result, they've kind of done that major season story arc that brings everything to a close and wraps everything up in a nice bow and leaves a little bit of openings if you want to say there was an epilogue or another season. And obviously this time they know that this is it, and they want it to be it. Like, I think Mike Schur and Amy Poehler are agreed that this is sort of the end of what they want to do. So if that's the case, maybe they'll be polar opposite from what they've done in the past and they'll just do several. I mean, last night's episode, Leslie and Ron, could have been a series finale.
Yep, I completely agree. And let's really dive into dissecting some of this episode, specifically the second one, because, I mean, it was just it was fantastic. And it really had what we love about Parks and Recreation, which is this perfect mix of comedy and heart and emotion. I mean, the fact that it had in the same episode Leslie singing the words to "We Didn't Start the Fire" all wrong, in the same episode where Ron kind of has this, like, I wouldn't say emotional breakdown, but this admittance that he was so emotionally devastated by the fact that everyone he had become comfortable with had left his job, that he was actually going to ask Leslie for a job to work in the National Parks Department, which is so against everything Ron Swanson is. That's a huge testament to his character. The fact that, and I know Mike Schur, I believe he wrote this one, the fact that they were able to balance out such, you know, pathos with still bringing laughs in is an amazing feat. And the fact that the show is still able to do it in its final season, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, this is a monstrous achievement for the series and for everyone that was involved, for the characters. I mean, this is something where if you look at the, and there are so many examples of this throughout the episode, but just a small one is in one of the season two episodes, and I don't even remember which one, Leslie asks Ron, why would anyone ever eat anything besides breakfast food? And Ron says, people are idiots, Leslie. And then last night at the end of the episode, Ron says, why does anyone in the world ever eat anything but breakfast food? And Leslie responds, people are idiots, Ron. And she hugs him. And it's like so perfectly full circle for those two characters, that he's taught her so much and he's been her mentor and her respected guy so much. But she's brought so much out of him. They aren't just workplace proximity acquaintances or whatever. Like, these are deep, deep, deep friends, and that have changed each other's lives so much for the better, that to bring them to separate them, I understand why fans were upset, because they felt it didn't ring true with what they brought out of each other prior to this. So to bring them back together in this way, and candidly, it's only been a week since we knew that Leslie and Ron were enemies, and yet a week later we have this huge emotional payoff to the fact that they were enemies. And again, that owes so much more to the strength of the emotional relationship that they built for the six seasons before that than it does for anything that was done in this season with Morningstar or what have you. So it's truly like a fantastic capper for the emotional relationship that's been at the heart of this series for such a long time. And it is, I mean, it's a crowning achievement in so many respects. If we get better episodes this season, I cannot wait to see them.
Yeah. And I think this just, this was like a love letter to the two characters and their relationship. I completely agree. And I mean, the whole Morningstar device as well was a fun little red herring, where, you know, you initially think that, oh, it's because Ron wanted to build this building on the plot where, you know, Anne's house was, and, you know, Leslie found that completely heartless. And I at first, when I didn't know what Morningstar was, I thought it was going to be some sort of like big thing where they were both in the wrong and then they'll make up. But then I realized, like, no, Parks is not as cliched as that. They'll actually work something out. And I did love the twist that, you know, the reason why Ron kind of did that was kind of a dig at Leslie, because, you know, we find out that as Leslie hired April and Terry, and as people started leaving the Parks Department to go work on their own things, Ron was lonely and he was surrounded by people that he didn't know whatsoever. So he, you know, that scene where he went to go talk to Leslie on her floor, and, you know, she basically is able to stand him up in a scene. She doesn't actually do it in the scene, but he realizes it as he's getting in the elevator. Is like, that's just fantastic and really, really great work on Nick Offerman's part. I think, you know, from the show, a lot of people talk about how great of a comedian Nick Offerman is. But the fact is, I mean, he's a great actor in general. And we talked about this last week. I am super pumped to see what he can do in Fargo as well, just because I think he's capable of so much. All these actors really are. I mean, Amy Poehler took this role and knocked it out of the park from where it could be. Between her and Steve Carell, Mike Schur has done a fantastic job in casting his lead roles of these really capable actors. And we really got to see both of them come to the forefront and really throw everything to the wall in that latter episode. Not to say the first episode isn't fantastic either. I think that's it's one of Parks and Recreation's classic, you know, nutball episodes, where you have Annabelle. We have the return of Annabelle Porter, the really fashionable lifestyle woman, and then we have that compared to Leslie's, you know, William Henry Harrison craze, and bringing on his great grandnephew, I think it was, Zachary Harrison. And we still get fun little specifics like with the William Henry Harrison Museum. So like, if you think about this whole thing as a big 1 hour episode, I think it represents perfectly what Parks and Recreation is.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there was so much fan service in the episode but it didn't do it at the expense of costing laughs for people that didn't necessarily know that it was fan service. So, for example, you referenced Pistol Pete earlier. Pistol Pete did pop up in this episode, and you'd have to almost pause it to see it. But he's on the list of local celebrities that Tom is proposing that they talk to. He's on the list along with, like, I think Little Sebastian lookalike.
Yeah.
And you've got Pert Hapley. You've got August Clementine, who is John Hodgman's NPR character. You've got Duri Merbles, who is Dan Castellaneta's one. And there's a few other just great, like, references to people that have popped up in Pawnee throughout the course of the series, that you, when you see their name on a list, you remember fondly that character. And you think, oh my gosh, we could see Pistol Pete again, or we could see more of August Clementine. Like, all of these are people that we might like to see. Crazy Ira and the Douche. Like, these are people that Dennis Feinstein, we could have just random people popping up on this final season, and there would be great ways to do that. So I think that was you're right. It's just kind of the zaniness and screwballiness. Pawnee is a town that apparently is within driving distance of Vincennes, Indiana, and the William Henry Harrison Museum. But in and of itself, Pawnee also has a snow globe museum. Mm-hmm. There's so many weird, with Martin Starr curating it in a bitter, angry way. So there's so many great things that are going on just within driving distance of Pawnee, Indiana, and these characters' lives, that this is a great episode where they can go and they can pull like a screwball type guy who's super focused on something and really show how that will play out with the interactions with these characters. We get some more people from the town. I mean, I really liked it. It doesn't have like the brilliance, I don't think, on the same level as Leslie and Ron from an emotional standpoint. Like, I love that in Leslie and Ron, for example, you were mentioning the scene where Ron is walking up to Leslie's floor. I love that we see that twice from each of their perspectives. And there are, I don't think, if I'm not wrong, I don't think there's another scene in the episode like that. I love that we see that from both of their perspectives, because it just shows that you can see why Leslie would have been caught up, and you can see why there's just no way, if you're looking closely at Ron in that scene, that you don't see he's trepidatious about something, that you don't see he's uncomfortable about something, and that Leslie Knope would have picked up on that cue if she was half paying attention. So I love that you see it from both of their perspectives. I think that's a brilliant piece of writing, and the way that all played out. William Henry Harrison is funny and brilliant in different ways. The stuff with the wire, the thing to get to play with in terms of what would be in a William Henry Harrison museum, other Harrisons. I think that was really funny.
Yeah.
I also like the things that were famous for like 30 days or 15 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, 30 days. And there was the kid who was in the
balloon boy.
Yeah,
Joe the plumber was in there.
Yeah,
which I think is funny. I mean, I just think that's classic Parks and Recreation. Just buried jokes. I want to pause and see all the things that are missing. I want to rewind and pick up on all these little hidden jokes. Like, that's classic Parks and Rec for sure.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that I found about this is that I feel like if we didn't do a 3-year flash forward, we would see an arc in season 7 of like Leslie's in a powerful position now. We would totally see the season long arc of like things going to her head and her kind of not realizing or forgetting things that happen with her friends, whether it's standing up Ron or doing things to other friends, and then her kind of realizing at the end of the season what she did, and then, you know, they'd all go back to being friends again, more or less. But they kind of condensed that all into one episode through her realizing what happened in one flashback. And I feel like the fact that they were able to still cram that much character development over the course of like half a minute is it, again, I cannot credit these writers enough for being able to do that, because, you know, the it sucks. It sucks that they ended up writing this whole thing where they jump forward 3 years, and now NBC says, okay, now you make a final season, and they have to make the choice either, okay, are we going to do the Breaking Bad thing where we, you know, tell what happens going up to that, or are we just going to stay in 2017? And if we do stay in 2017, how the hell do we go from here, and how do we fill in what happened in those 3 years? And I feel like flashbacks like this do a great job of doing it. I don't know if we're going to see any more. I feel like Leslie and Ron was a very mold-breaking episode in terms of both the way it was done, with only like two people being in the majority of it, and there being a vast majority of flashbacks, which Parks and Recreation almost never uses. I'll be interested to see if they really break the story structure anymore over the course of this season.
Yeah, I agree with you, because their well is so deep. Like, they can pull a guy like the Historical Society guy. He popped up in a season two episode, in the 94 meetings episode, when Leslie chains herself to the gate because of the historical mansion being destroyed. And he's there. You've got the janitor listening to Shania Twain. And that janitor has previously been shown years ago, I believe it was in a Little Sebastian episode, listening to Shania Twain. So the show is so deep in terms of what they can pull from and they can kind of play with, that they don't necessarily have to do these sort of gap flashbacks where they're like, this is what happened in 2015, 2016. They can, though. And if they do, they can still find ways to work other characters in. Like, there could be an incident with Dennis Feinstein that happened in 2016, and we could see a flashback of it. I don't think they're going to break it down that way. But because the show has such a deep bench of people, and they're so aware of the people that have played a role in this town, that they absolutely could do that. And it would be almost seamless, because you would say, oh, that character's a little familiar. Like, I kind of remember that guy. Or if they wanted to do something with the former police chief, for example, they absolutely could do that. If Louis C.K. popped back up again, there's a way to do that without it all happening in the current timeline. So they could break it that way and still be relevant enough with the characters that they've established over the course of the previous six seasons, that it wouldn't feel so jarring, like you wouldn't be meeting people for the first time. And I say this because I think, and I could be wrong, I only watched the full episode of Leslie and Ron once. And so I think when Leslie has that crazy timeline that she's written up on the board, when not the first one where it's very simple and yeah, it's got all the very day, Leslie's version of it, I believe I saw the word pachitis written on there somewhere.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if that's it. Like, I don't know if that's all we're going to get, that there was another pachitis incident. However, there could be an episode that talks about that. I mean, that could be the little hint to that. And I really want to get another look at that timeline, because that might give us a better idea of some of the things that we could have missed out on. And that might be the only references we're going to get to that.
So is that the Parks and Recreation version of the blast door from Lost?
Yeah. Believe me, if I pause that blast door from Lost once, I pause it a million times. So I have looked at that thing over and over and over again, and I'm probably going to do the same thing with this timeline of Leslie's, which is funny because Leslie is literally insane about stuff like this. So there's probably going to be things on there about Joe Biden and things that don't matter at all. But there's a little bit more of that in the episode last night. And I was kind of looking at Reddit earlier today, the list of Leslie's offenses that she says Leslie is not sure at this moment why Ron was upset with her. So she's written down, right, and brainstormed all the things that might have upset him. Mm-hmm. And if you did you get a chance to look, did you freeze frame it on that or look at those?
No,
at all?
I wasn't able to.
Okay, so I have them right here. There's yes, some really pretty funny ones. And this as in and of itself, I think this kind of sheds light on what we could have missed. So the first one is gold. Had conversations with the Postmaster General about getting your face on a stamp. So I can, that probably happened in the sometime before Morningstar, but after Leslie left the Parks Department, sent you a birthday card through the U.S. mail. I think that might have been mentioned on the show.
Yeah, and accidentally gave the postman your mailing address.
Right, right. God forbid, right?
Yeah, exactly. They could find the gold buried in his backyard.
Well, if you think that all his gold is buried in his backyard, you're crazy. That's dummy gold. that's fake. That's just to throw you off the scent. Taught the triplets the dangers of minimizing the role of government in an increasingly complex society. I don't know how Ron would have picked up on that. This one is just absurd. I submitted to the New Yorker caption contest under your name.
Invited. Now, what do you think the caption was?
That is a very, very good question. And it has to be a Leslie Knope caption, unless she was trying to get a Ron Swanson caption included there, like hello woman or hello nurse.
Yeah.
Or something very plain.
Or something like, I don't know, like I see you have a basketball.
Yes. Oh, that's very nice. Invited you to my LinkedIn professional circle. That would drive Ron Swanson.
Oh, I feel like that would drive a lot of, LinkedIn is, people are still adapting to it. I feel like that would drive a lot of people nowadays crazy.
Yeah. 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 And Ron, especially because he probably would have no real clue what it was. And this is not anyway. Yeah. That's on there. That I had food and stuff shut down temporarily for a health code violation that was mentioned on the show.
But now they have Complete Foods.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. Why don't you just go to that store, Complete Foods?
It's Whole Foods. Yeah,
Ron. That was great. That was great. And Ron, they probably have meatless bacon there. So that would be a store that
Thank
Ron.
Thank you. Another.
Yes. Oh, please. I'll have another. Yes.
April gets that away.
Yep. That's fantastic. So who knows what's going on with the Whole Foods in Pawnee, or if Ron's ever been there. He called it Complete Food, so it doesn't sound like it's a place he frequents too often.
Yeah.
Leslie apparently started using the word scrumptious too much, which she thought might have offended Ron. I don't know.
Oh, did she see Willy Wonka one too many times?
Scrumdiddlyumptious?
Yeah, might be.
She once offered Ron an apple, and she put in parentheses, shouldn't count, I was super drunk.
I gotta say, randomly doing a tangent from that, Amy Poehler's drunk scenes as Leslie Knope are perhaps some of the funniest scenes in the entire show.
Yeah,
I agree. Amazing.
I agree. She plays it really well because she's fart and she's smunny. And she's smart and she's funny. Yeah, she's got such great slips of the tongue when she's loaded up on drugs or sick or drunk. She just plays all that really well.
Yeah, and she sings the hit song, Everybody Pants Now.
typical Amy Poehler. I can see that coming down the pike for sure.
Yep.
I love the opportunities that she's given. And of course, we had an all-time classic one on last night's episode where she's given to just riff and run it off. I'm guessing that in the script for this episode, in the We Didn't Start the Fire parody, it just says, Leslie makes up words to We Didn't Start the Fire that have nothing to do with the actual words of the song.
And I wish I had written some of them down because they were just so good.
I've got that one as well. If you want. Oh,
perfect.
I've got that one as well as you want to hit that. There is one final on Leslie's offenses. She bought a chair from IKEA.
Oh.
Which would probably upset Ron for sure. Yeah. I don't know what Ron would. I don't know what Ron's name for IKEA would be, like Swiss Furniture Store.
Yeah, or but, those. I don't know, those sleazy Swedes.
Exactly. So yeah, prefab furniture store. But you gotta hand it to Leslie. In a very short time, late at night, she came up with a list of things, many of which were very likely to have upset Ron. So kudos to her for coming up with that list. And so we could flash back to any or all of those moments. Most of them are small moments. I don't think we're going to see Leslie on her LinkedIn profile inviting Ron. But some of the other ones, the postage stamp or things like that, I think that they're things that, you know, we just are to assume that went on while we flashed forward. And these are things Leslie did in a very quick period before she was upset with Ron and before they weren't friends anymore. So that all happened. That whatever happened, happened, and that happened. But speaking of We Didn't Start the Fire.
Yes.
She clearly knows none of the verses. And she clearly has some serious issues. And I don't know what she was given to play with here, but she starts by saying she doesn't know the words. And she says, Harry Truman was a guy, America, red, China, all the countries, other people, everyone is fun. That's where she starts. So I think she knows the general theme of the song is like all these things have happened in the world. And, you know, Billy Joel's running through like the last 40 years of history.
Yeah.
And she's got the idea that there's Harry Truman, red China. Like she knows major historical things are mentioned in this song, but she doesn't really know where it goes. And that goes off the rails pretty quick because the next thing that she says is seemingly unrelated because after that she says, Joe Montana, Ian McKellen, I have to buy a new toaster. This is awesome. You're so stupid. Jumping up and down. And that's the whole first verse.
Those are classic Joel lyrics.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, just tapping into the heart of not only Long Islanders, but Americans at large. Really, Billy Joel, the voice of an era.
Absolutely.
Gotta buy a new toaster, jumping up and down.
I feel like if he was a generation sooner, if he was the voice of like my generation, the ADD generation, I feel like that'd be more appropriate.
Yeah, this is it. This is like I'm surfing. This is my Amazon recommendations because the next verse is even a little farther off the rails. And so it begins by saying Freddy Krueger bought some pans. Oprah has a turtle farm. Peter Piper, pee pee poopy daddy ate a squirrel. That has really very little to do with the original theme of We Didn't Start the Fire. It has very little to do with anything resembling cogent thought. It's just a series of musings and exclamations that are probably unrelated. And Freddy Krueger bought some pans. I mean, I don't even know where she's pulling that from.
Well, clearly it represents the commercialization of Hollywood, specifically horror movies that have been kind of mass produced to generate scares out of audiences.
That's deep, man. That's some deep shit.
Yeah, Daddy ate a squirrel. It refers to the fact that we are slowly but surely killing our wildlife to use for our own consumption.
What about Oprah bought a turtle farm?
This talks about how celebrities are able to use their mass amounts of wealth to buy nonsensical things, and the fact that they're not truly giving their vast riches to things that actually matter in the world.
Peter Piper, pee pee poopy.
It refers to the fact that, you know, a child's literature can sometimes be very sophomoric, and it can sometimes eradicate or irradiate our children's minds with scatological humor.
Yeah, you could pick a pack of pickled. You can get in some real trouble if you try to say that five times fast.
I'm slowly composing my dissertation on Leslie Knope's version of We Didn't Start the Fire, in case you were wondering.
Slowly but surely. I mean, you already gave this more meaning than I think is in the actual We Didn't Start the Fire, which the starting the fire is like the overarching metaphor of the song. And I really think it's not that brilliant of a metaphor. It's pretty clear what he's talking about. So, yeah, I think that you've put a lot more meaning in this song through slowly but surely your dissertation than Billy Joel ever intended. And certainly more than Amy Poehler intended. This is great. This is true artistic interpretation.
Just wait until I do Piano Man.
Oh, my gosh. Sing us a song, Mr. Bloom.
That'll be for next time.
It's too late right now. It's like 9 o'clock on a Saturday.
Oh, man. The regular crowd shuffling in.
Yeah.
So before we go, I just want to get your gauge on the ending. Now, Josh and I touched a little bit upon what we thought the ending of Parks and Recreation might be. I want to get from you any sort of predictions you may have as to how you would want the series to end, whether they're loosely sketched out or whether you know like the specific scene that you would want the show to end on.
Yeah, like I said, I do think that I would like to see the series end on Leslie and maybe Ron giving a final goodbye to the Parks Department, maybe shutting the lights off in that building and kind of walking out of that office. Like maybe they have a party there. Maybe there's some kind of final hurrah and people are gradually leaving one by one. And the last two people out are Leslie and Ron, and they shut off the lights and we see an empty Parks Department. That's it. I realize that's sort of how The Office ended. I realize that is how Cheers ended. So maybe it's a little cliche at that point, and I can let that live on in my mind if it doesn't happen and be happy about it. I got to say, other than that, though, it's weird because the Leslie and Ron thing came to denouement, like came to the ending so quickly that I feel like the sky's the limit and it's wide open here without knowing what the kind of overarching people or storylines are going to be for this season. If I had to say how I wanted the series to end, it's ended so well so many times, whether it's the group singing with your 5,000 candles in the wind and the kind of at the Unity concert, or whether it's everything that has kind of gone before in previous finales with winning elections and things like that. I mean, something quiet and focusing on the emotional relationships of the characters is what the series is probably great to do, but they just did that last night or Tuesday night. So it's really hard for me to pinpoint something now. I kind of an open mind with the blank slate, like just really looking forward to enjoying the ride because I feel like they hit that emotional note last night with the finale that I would have wanted. Leslie and Ron kind of walking away down that hall talking about breakfast food. Like I feel like they really hit that, and we didn't really hit it, but there was so much other fan service in the episode with Ron hanging up the picture of the breakfast mm-hmm. food, or them finding the mural, the camel that they made by all picking their favorite parts of making a urinal or a mural, if you will, and putting it together. That they found that and rehung it on the wall and all those things. I mean, that was all so great in terms of looking back at great moments that have occurred in that department or just great kind of character things that had happened that I think they just hit the notes that I want them to hit in a finale so well last night that I'm kind of a blank slate. I really am not. I don't have my mind set on anything that I have to have now. Like, I feel like I'm playing with house money because they really crushed it out of the park so hard last night that where we go from here, it doesn't really matter to me because I'm so happy. And I say last night, Tuesday night, I'm so happy with what we've seen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did your opinion change at all after what you saw?
That's a good question. I do agree with you that it still is reverberating oddly to me that this arc ended so early. I am in love with the way it ended. Like I said, I think this is one of the best episodes the show's ever produced, but it leaves such a big question mark for where do we go from here and where are these other 8 episodes going to bring. So I guess it depends on how those run out. You know, as you said before, I could definitely, I'd be okay with this as a series finale. I would be unhappy that we wouldn't get closures from a lot of the other characters.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had another episode that showed what they were doing during those 8 hours. But I agree.
If you take this in a vacuum season finale, but if or series finale, but not a good series finale in terms of the stories of Ben and April and people like that. You're right.
Yeah. So I think it's a great, like if somebody said, you know, that's a wrap on Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman, I think I would be okay with that. But, you know, now I'm wondering what's to come. Will there be a big bad this season? Will they all just kind of run around? Will Grizzle become the big bad? I'm not sure, but I guess that's the fun of it as well. One thing I do hope we find out by the end is whether Ben Wyatt is or is not a ghost.
Because he very well could be, right?
I just love Adam Scott has, you know, it's I think I read about this on maybe AV Club or Entertainment Weekly today that like Adam Scott as Ben Wyatt has an unremarkably tough job in terms of like he has to be a straight man to nearly every character in the ensemble, plus he has to have his own quirks. So the, you know, the fact that his character actually committed so hard to the belief that he might be a ghost or in some sort of Groundhog Day because he just can't get those forms notarized, it was kind of a silly subplot, but I think it's like perfect Ben that like he's just being driven crazy by these minute things.
Yeah, I agree completely. That is a classic Ben being kind of detail oriented, type A spreadsheet kind of guy, to not be able to dot those I's and cross those T's correctly was perfect for him. And I like that it all came in the form of doing service to Jerry, Terry, a character who has always been somebody that Ben has kind of felt a little more sympathetic to than others in the ensemble. Ben has always treated him nicer. They had their great kind of bromance day where Leslie could not go on all the things that Ben had planned for their anniversary. So Ben did them all with Jerry, and that was great. And so they've always had this kind of relationship where he is absolutely going to humor Jerry/Terry, and he's the kind of guy that wouldn't push him around and then that wouldn't get amped up about it. So that was great, Ben Wyatt, and he may well be a ghost. Who knows? And the thing is, I get the impression that so much of the series has been about Ben's character arc since he's been on the show, going from the Ice Town clown to kind of where he's ended up, that he's kind of on top of the world in a lot of respects. He's pretty good with where he's at. He just got honored. He's done a lot of great things in the city. The city is booming. He sort of has been redeemed. So I don't know how much more we need out of his character in terms of his arc. But I think you raise a good point with perhaps Grizzle being the villains, because if Ron were to back out of their deal and they were still really looking to push forward with it, and they might pull out all the stops, similar to how the Newport campaign did in previous seasons and things like that, then maybe Ben has a role to play there. Maybe he has to lead the campaign or charge against Grizzle. Maybe that happens. And so it's maybe Ben's big final work. So there may be something there, and I'd be happy to see it. Or he could just be a ghost, and he could be somebody that Werner Herzog has just seen talking about in a random corner of a random building in Pawnee. That would be fantastic, too. Maybe he belongs on the fourth floor.
So whether you're a ghost or a corpulent human being, you can reach out to us through a variety of ways from this podcast. You can reach out to Antonio on Twitter. He's at AC Mazzaro, 2 Z's, 1 R, correct?
You got it.
And I am at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. We are always welcome for any and all reception about anything. I will not give any sort of guarantee that we will be doing this weekly. Like I said before, I think the reason why Antonio and I wanted to do this was because the Ron and Leslie episode specifically was such a monumental episode, and it was so well done that we just had to talk about it. But we'll see whether we want to do this weekly or not. But what is definitely guaranteed is that myself and Antonio and Josh Wiggler, I think we will get the three of us together to talk about this season and the series as a whole shortly after the series finale in, I believe, end of February, perhaps.
I don't say it. It makes me so sad.
I know. But good news, Antonio, your Justified final season just began, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Josh Wiggler and I are talking Justified at post-show recaps. So if you like the show Justified, or you know anyone who does, spread the word, because we're breaking it down episode by episode as the season airs. We also did a rewatch of all 5 seasons leading up to this final season. We did a separate podcast for each one. So if you've never seen the show, it's on Amazon. You can catch up, or you can share the feelings with the people who have seen the show that you know in your life who would like to listen to that podcast. And we certainly appreciate it. What else are you up to, Mike?
So I am currently on the Rob Has a Podcast main feed covering The Celebrity Apprentice with the one and only Rob Sesternino. They're doing the same thing with Celebrity Apprentice as they are with Parks and Rec, actually, and doubling up on episodes. So maybe they might actually be ending around the same time, which would just be a death knell to my love of NBC. So we're doing that. As for work on post-show recaps, the main show I work on, Once Upon a Time, doesn't start up again until March 1st. So we're at a little bit over a month until then. But I have lots of other stuff in the pipeline, probably going to be working on some other one-time things. And I do have a possible special surprise of coverage coming in April, in addition to Once Upon a Time, but I will not mention that now. But speaking of new coverage, Antonio, Better Call Saul starts in a couple of weeks, correct? And I believe that's coverage is going to start on post-show recaps for that.
You got it. And I have heard rave reviews of the first few episodes of that series. I don't remember what publication it was, saying it's better than the first episodes of Breaking Bad, which is hard to believe.
Wow.
So they know what they're doing. There's been a lot of reasons to be skeptical about this show, the chief among them that it exists at all. But it sounds like it could end up being really, really good. So that's something great to look forward to.
Yeah. Now, before we really wrap things up, one more question that I forgot to ask Antonio. As a big Game of Thrones fan, how do you feel about the possibility of a series finale where Daenerys Targaryen marries Jack Sparrow?
That sounds like it's really gone off the rails, and I don't know if it would make sense if I read the books or not.
Well, probably like what's the producer's name? Gore Verbinski or whatever his name is. Hopped on board, I guess, to work on the series later on.
Oh boy! I tell you what, that Johnny Depp can't keep from getting his hands on everything, can he?
Well, he must have sailed the Black Pearl through the Blackwater to get to Westeros.
Yeah, that's a good call. Maybe he just popped up as Mordecai and then they left him in there.
That's true. So we'll see. That might have been a big Game of Thrones spoiler that we didn't know about. We'll have to wait until book club.
I'll tell you what. I just like the implication that by 2017, there will be additional Game of Thrones books. That enough is enough to keep me up. So I'm happy about that.
Well, they might be optimistic.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, you're probably right. But I don't like to believe that. I'm thinking hopefully we'll get some good news this year. 2015.
It's going to be a good year for a variety of reasons, Parks and Rec included. All right, Antonio, do you have any sort of hashtag we should give the listeners who made it all the way through this podcast?
I don't really have a good one. Do you? I mean, do you have a good one? Like, what about Oprah Turtle Farm?
I was literally thinking, literally thinking Oprah Turtle Farm.
Well, there you go. That's really two great minds think alike.
Exactly. So let's go with Oprah Turtle Farm for making it through. Thank you guys so much. You can always respond as well to the comments on this page or reaching out to us via postshowrecaps.com/feedback. We'd love to hear anything you have to say about the show, what you like, what you didn't like, what your interpretations of Leslie's We Didn't Start the Fire are. But for now, we will say goodbye. Again, hashtag Oprah Turtle Farm if you made it this far. Thank you guys so much for listening, and take care. The pair. Well, I was in the pair. You were in the pair. Your pair.